Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, November the 21st. Well, I always wanted to do a show about this Kenosha trial and what was going on up there, but I sort of kept a distance from it because I don't like to talk about trials when they're underway because I really don't know what's going on inside the courthouse. I think that that's why we have trials, and that's why we have juries, and that's why we have a prosecution and a defense attorney, and that's why we go through this. And then we have a verdict one way or the other. And over the years, I've tended to respect the verdict. I just feel that that's the way it should be. You got to give the benefit of the doubt to the people who are sitting there in that jury. So today we're going to talk about Kenosha, my thoughts. This is obviously a lot more complicated than a trial because you have had to say the least, a hysterical reaction from some on the left. So here's our good friend Bruce Woodall, who's going to help us understand what happened. He's got a very unique perspective in all of this. And so we're going to – let me say hello to our friend Bruce. How are you, Bruce?
Good, Silvio. How are you doing?
Just doing great. I know you're an author, and just give us a quick summary of what's going on right now with your writing.
I am working on a 3-episode screenplay for a book that I was given, I think, in April, and I'm still working on it, turning it into 3 episodes, and the production company will take it to a streaming service and try and sell it when I am done. So when I get done with the dialogue and the scenes and stuff, now I have to break it up into timed segments. So that's what I'll be doing this week.
Absolutely. Great. We wish you the best on that. Now, before we get into the topic, this is kind of a funny on this day in history note. Our family arrived in the United States in September of 1964. And, you know, my brother and I got into music like a lot of people, you know, did back then. And there was a song on the radio this week that was the number one song in the country called The Leader of the Pack. There were three girls who were, there were two sisters and a friend, I guess. And they were called the Shangri-La. And they were a kind of a rough-looking, they weren't, you know, your sweet little McGuire sisters kind of girls. They looked a little rougher. But nevertheless, they had a great sound. And I think Leader of the Pack was their biggest hit, probably their only hit, I think. But I thought that was a really cool song. Do you remember that song, Bruce?
Yes, I do. My sister had the 45.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it had the overdone with the motorcycle sound in it, remember?
Yeah, yeah. That's right. The whole story of it, you know, was, I guess, teenage love. Some teenage girl falls in love with a guy who has a motorcycle. And then, of course, in the end, he's killed in an accident or whatever it happens. But I thought it was one of the coolest songs. And it's been featured in various movies, as far as I can tell. Or it's been in the soundtrack. Every time they do one of these soundtrack albums, somehow it makes it into that. So hopefully these three girls who made that song many, many years ago, hopefully they get some royalties out of it because they don't always get that. You know, sometimes, you know, you had the big hit, but you didn't make any money out of it, Bruce.
Yeah, that's true. I think it was Gary Lyman or one of the black artists hardly saw any money at all from his recordings and stuff. And he died of a heroin overdose when he was young. And I think years later, his family started seeing some of that because they just ripped these kids off, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think the way they did it back then, since, you know, today you can pretty much do your own stuff. I mean, you could literally make your own album today, or at least cut a song and download it or whatever. So you can control a lot of your destiny now. But back then, you walked into a studio, and the studio said, okay, we'll cut your record, but, you know, we're going to make the profit out of it, and because it's too much of a risk, I said, or whatever. But, yeah, a lot of groups didn't get to keep their money, which is a shame. Because, you know, you hear these songs over and over and over again, and you wonder, you know, whatever happened to the artist. But The Leader of the Pack by the Shangri-La, there were three girls, two sisters, and the lead singer, I think her name was Mary. Mary, I have to read my blog again to remember their names. All right, Bruce, let's get into the topic of Kenosha. As I mentioned in my introduction, I tend to stay away from trials. Because I don't really know everything about it, and a trial is very complex, and what happened or didn't happen, and the prosecution and the defense. I don't have the time to sit in front of the TV all day long and watch it, so I tend to stay away from it and then just accept the verdict. And in this case, the verdict was not guilty. Just as a curiosity on my part, do you follow trials? Because I don't, but do you follow them pretty closely?
No, I don't. And the reason why is I don't think you get an accurate picture, an unbiased picture of what's going on in the trials of today's media.
Absolutely. And in this case, I think in this case, Bruce, we can conclude that there were two trials, the one that was actually going on and the one that was going on in the media, because it was like two entirely different stories, Bruce.
Well, the thing about the ideology driving the left was they assumed the position of authority in commenting on the Rittenhouse trial and then the verdict. The ideology has become the authority, and they're making threats and promises and, you know, this will go on probably, you know, for the next few years. They're going to try to turn the tables of what happened in Kenosha. What happened in Kenosha was a protest over the shooting of a young man named Blake, who had gotten into a car with a knife with children in there. Police told him to drop the knife. He refused, and he was shot. He lived. The protest started from there, and Kenosha was burning. There were protests. Vandalism, private property was going up, people's lives are at stake, and the police had been told to stand down. And so Rittenhouse was part of a group of guys that went out to protect, I guess, a gas station, someone's private property. He was separated from the group and attacked by the people that he shot and killed. Two people he shot and one guy he wounded.
But he didn't shoot first, right? He didn't shoot first. I mean, he was attacked by these people, right? And then he shot them as he was trying to protect himself. Do I have that right?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
Yes, he was attacked by a guy with a skateboard, and another guy tried to kick him in the head. And, you know, they say, well, he was untrained. He shouldn't have been there. He had some sort of training because he had enough sense that he was probably terrified that he shot and killed his attackers.
Right, because he was on the ground, wasn't he? He was on the ground.
Yeah.
And these two guys were, you know, if I had been this young man on the ground, I would have taken this threat pretty seriously. Because, I mean, they were out to get me. And I would have treated it that way. I would have treated it as if they were trying to kill me, Bruce.
Yes. I'm probably pretty sure I would have done the same thing.
So the fellow gets arrested. This whole thing becomes a national story. But let me go back to a point you made, which I thought was very valuable, and I want to go back to it for a second. It was Jacob Blake there was a warrant for his arrest, as I understand, and he didn't. Cooperate with the police. That's your first mistake. When you get stopped by the police, you need to cooperate. You know, I always told my sons that when they were young growing up. I said, if you get stopped by the police, you respect the police. You know, if you feel something that you didn't get treated right or something, we'll deal with that later. But at that moment, the police is the authority, and you got to respect them. And thankfully, they never did anything stupid. But that was the something I always taught them, that you have to respect the police in that situation. Obviously, Jacob Blake, whatever his name is, didn't. But then came another very important point that you made also, Bruce, that I think has to be understood, and that is that the city of Kenosha and the state of Wisconsin let this lawlessness happen. And to some degree, they're responsible for all those guns on the streets and all that violence, because you don't let that kind of lawlessness happen. You got to deal with it right away, Bruce.
Yes. I saw this repeated in Denver. You know, the police were told to stand down. And the reason why is I have my adult children lived in the Denver area, and I was hoping they didn't go downtown. And the police were told to stand down in many cities across the United States. This is what happens when the police don't respond and the citizens take protection of private property into their own hands, you know, and they're saying, well, these guys are vigilantes. Maybe that's not a bad word. You know, they're not going out and seeking out people by race or by class or whatever to terrorize. They're trying to protect the private property of the citizens of Kenosha. And if there's veterans there, you know, they probably they may have remembered that they took an oath to protect the Constitution against all threats, domestic and foreign. And that certainly is a threat to the Constitution when these leftist Marxist ideologies claim the authority in these communities. And the response that I've been hearing, you know, I heard some really ridiculous ones. You know, what they're going to do, there's going to be trouble. There was a protest in Albuquerque where they brought up the names of people who've been killed in the past, and they want accountability for all of that. I mean, just go with it. I say go. Let the country see just exactly how far out you are. And I don't know anyone, white or black, that disagrees with that verdict. You know,
right.
The crowd, it's not a racial thing. You know, they all saw it. It was played out. The prosecution didn't do a good job. Basically gave him the verdict. And I don't know anyone, and I'm being serious, I don't know anyone that disagrees with that verdict, regardless of their race, their economic status, you know?
No, I agree. I mean, if you look at who's been disagreeing with it, it's the usual suspects, the kinds of people who are always looking at the racial angle of everything. But it's hilarious to see a march. I think it was in Chicago. There was a march. I saw something on the news. And these people are out there screaming, saying what the country needs now is a communist revolution. And I'm sitting there saying, okay, I think you just told us who you are. You're not really interested in racial relations. You're not really interested in anything. This is a movement to blow up the country, hurt the country, and you know, you lost me. You lost me. When someone says, we're protesting what happened in Kenosha and the answer to our problems, the communist revolution, you lost me. I mean, I'm out of here. I said, this is crazy. I'm not going to, you know, listen to you people. You're nuts. You're crazy. And so I think you're right. I think when people see who these people are, I think a lot of people say, you know what? These people are crazy, Bruce.
Yeah. If you ask me what I believe the message from the verdict is, it simply restores faith in the American judicial system. You know, the threats of violence against the judge or the jurists or communities put out by the leftist Marxists didn't prevail at this time, this one. I don't know about ones in the future, because like I say, the ideology is they're assuming the authority, and they have no authority.
Mm-hmm.
they have simply the threat of violence.
Right.
And I don't know how far that will go. I wonder how many more police departments are going to wake up and say, we're not going to stand down.
Well, I think it's very irresponsible on the part of local leaders and especially governors to allow to tell police officers to stand down when you've got this kind of lawlessness. You know, we saw this the first night in Minneapolis when it all started, and they're sitting there and they're going to the police station. Well, that would have been the moment to stop it. That would have been the moment to say, this stops right now. You're not going to get into the police station. But they let them get burned down the police station, and you know, you've lost the authority when that happens, Bruce. And again, I don't think the governor of Wisconsin has a lot to be proud of, frankly, for the way he acted during this whole thing, because he put that people in that city at risk by his behavior. That's my my philosophy. But let me take a little break, Bruce, and then I'd like to come back and maybe just talk a little bit about the reaction, because the reaction is just absolutely insane. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with our friend Bruce right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Just a quick reminder, the music that we play on the show is the music of my good friend Carlos Geddes, and I have a link to his website on the show information. Let's go back to our friend Bruce. Bruce, anything else that you want to add to the first segment we had about the incident? I know we went through a lot there, but anything else that you want to add that you wanted to put on the table that maybe we didn't have a chance to do?
Well, the initial incident, as portrayed by a Marxist press, it has been mischaracterized. They had him out as a stalker hunter, you know, going out to him. And initially, the first one I heard, he was looking for people of color to shoot, then he got white guys who were sympathetic to Black Lives Matters. So that makes him a racist, regardless. Because the whites that he shot were sympathetic to Black Lives Matters. How do they know? You know what I'm saying? How do they know? And so,
well, they don't.
There's that.
They're just making that up because it fits the narrative. But another story too is that he walked in. You know, he came from another state with an AR-15. First of all, I don't know if that's true because I heard that, but I don't know if it's true or not. But even if it was true, is that illegal, Bruce, to walk across a state line with an AR-15?
I think, you know, he did come across a straight line, but I think the AR-15 was waiting for him. I think it came from either his dad or whichever parent lives on that side of the, you know, in Kenosha, or someone provided it for him. But because of the caliber and his age, it wasn't illegal. There was nothing illegal about the weapon whatsoever.
Right, and this is another thing too that they didn't mention in all the coverage, that you know they made it sound as if he came into Kenosha, when in fact he was very familiar with Kenosha. I understand his father lives there, as you say. I believe that he lived there.
I believe so. Yeah.
And at one time, I think he worked in a swimming pool or something, one of these public swimming pools as a lifeguard, I think.
He had roots in that community, whereas the guy that he shot in the bicep did not. That guy pointed a weapon at him, and he traveled more from farther away than Rittenhouse did to be at that Kenosha that night.
Right. And that's another point, Bruce. Yeah, go ahead, Bruce. I'm sorry.
He stated his intent. You know, that guy stated his intent. He pointed the weapon at his weapon at Rittenhouse, and then he was shot.
Right. Now, an interesting point, because this happened throughout the whole summer of 2020, and the media did not emphasize this, that many of the people who were burning and the arsonists were actually people who were coming in from out of town. That, you know, I remember when Kenosha was burning that people were saying, we don't know who this guy is. We don't recognize these people. They're from out of town. So you had this pattern throughout that summer of 2020 where, you know, the people who were actually from out of town were the people who were burning and coming in to create trouble. They were being bussed in to create all this trouble, Bruce.
Yes, that's a fact. I have, you know, like I say, roots in Denver, and Denver experienced the same thing in 2020. Busloads of people come in and march around Denver and destroy private property, and the police were told to stand down.
Right. Now, when you tell the police to stand down, then you got to deal with the consequences that you're going to have chaos in the streets, and citizens are going to protect themselves. I mean, that's why we have a police force, to be the, you know, to protect us from these things. But when you tell them to stand down, then, you know, a lot of bad things are going to happen. Now, the reaction, Bruce, from the left, and I'm thinking specifically of MSNBC. There's two women there at MSNBC. One is Joy Reid, and another one, her last name is Cross, C-R-O-S-S. The reaction from these two women, it's just about as crazy as it gets. I think it's racism, the things they're saying. These are not political differences, you know. This is racism, what they're saying. And I have a post hopefully coming out Monday where I'm asking the question, do the advertisers know what these women are saying? Because, you know, they're the ones paying for the time for these shows. And do they know what these people are saying and the horrible things they're saying about, you know, people who disagree with them? Because I guarantee you that if it was the other way around, there'd be all kinds of calls for canceling the show and to have these people resign from the air, Bruce.
Yeah, I call it political racial expediency, you know, kind of a big term, but they're trying to get their political expediency at the expense of racial relations in the United States. And it's just not working. There's a very small percentage of people, regardless of race, that are buying into that and are getting the maximum airtime. You see them on all the different channels, you know. It's just a matter of time before it burns out. And I think the 2022 elections are going to show us that. Look at Virginia, you know.
Right.
Flipped around. And let's see where this goes.
Well, here's the – I'm going to pair – go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Bruce.
Well, I was going to say the diversionary quality of this is quickly fading off. You know, if they want to use this to take the attention away from something the president or Nancy Pelosi is doing or something like that, it's not working. Americans want to get over this and want to get on with the business of this lousy president and the economic situation we're in.
That's right, and I think I think you're right. I think a lot of people are basically fed up with this kind of everything is about racism politics. But I'm going to paraphrase something that the Joy Reid. Joy Reid has a show at MSNBC. This woman is honestly, she's full of hatred. I don't know how else to describe her. But she said, and I'm just going to read this very quickly, she said she argues that Kyle, the young man, is a modern-day incarnation of slave catchers who, I guess, were given the right to inflict violence in the name of protecting property, which is the foundation of America, Joy Reid says. And then she says, this is almost ridiculous, she says, we need to pray for the families of those he shot. Well, okay, I can buy that to a point. I mean, I think we should pray for the family of anybody who gets shot. I mean, I don't think that, you know, I would disagree with that. But I also added in my post that we should pray for Joy Reid. because this woman needs help. When you compare this fellow, this young man, Kyle, with the people 150 years ago or more who were sent out to catch slaves who had, let's say, broken away from the plantation, I mean, that is so over the top, Bruce, that I'm amazed it even gets on the air. I'm amazed that NBC allows that to get on the air, Bruce.
Let me give you a couple examples of what I've seen in the media. I watch Channel 2 out of New York City. Okay, mm-hmm. There's a lot of violence portrayed on there. I think it was on Friday, a young man shot four other teenagers, and they showed the kids getting their friends in a car to take them to the hospital, and they show him from security camera footage they have running away from the scene, firing a weapon in the direction of the police. It made the news in New York City. I think it occurred in Brooklyn. That's it. Okay, in Aurora, Colorado, six kids were shot at a high school from a drive-by shooting. And then like less than a week later, two more were shot at another high school in a drive-by shooting. And it made the news in Denver. Community leaders haven't come out and voiced an opinion on that. When is this going to end? You see what I'm saying? There's no racial political expedience tied with those three examples of violence against teenagers. And, you know, it could be white, could be black, could be Puerto Rican or Hispanic, you know. There's no expediency to be gained with that. And so you don't see any protests there. You don't see them interviewing the families, the parents of these kids. Because they don't stand to make anything from this.
Right.
To gain anything, is I guess I should say, to gain anything.
Yeah. Well, what I see happening is when the violence is convenient or the violence fits the narrative, then they talk about it. But for example, there was another trial in the last few days of a black young man who was found not guilty acting in self-defense.
Where was that at?
I don't know where that was at, but it was, you know, happening somewhere, I think in the South, actually, somewhere in the South. But my whole point is that there was a young black man who was found not guilty on the grounds of self-defense, not too different, frankly, than in the case of Rittenhouse. The cases are never identical, but I mean, it was a case of self-defense. So that was a young black man who was protected under the self-defense, but I don't see much talk about that case. I mean, it's almost as if that case didn't happen, Bruce. I don't know exactly where it was, but it just happened here in the last couple of days, almost at the same time as the Rittenhouse case happened. But, you know, again, self-defense is criticized when Kyle gets it, but not criticized when the other fellow gets it. And that's the thing that just absolutely blows me away, Bruce. I just don't know why the double standard.
Well, maybe it's limited capacity. I don't know. The danger to black America is, to law-abiding citizens of that community is, these white Marxists are going to exploit these communities, these minority communities, to get their political ideology across and claim it has authority. Well, you know, if a black man uses a weapon to protect himself and he gets off, that's probably not what they want to hear.
No.
You know, they want this done at the expense of legal citizens that are carrying legal firearms. And
well,
that's the racism.
Yeah. No. What worries me more than anything else, Bruce, is how poisonous this is. You know, when you have people on television saying, like even the President of the United States, saying that he's disappointed with the verdict, but he doesn't tell you why. It's like, oh, I'm disappointed with the verdict. Okay, but why are you disappointed with the verdict? What information do you have that we don't have? But that never comes up. He just gets away with saying he's disappointed with the verdict. And that is so irresponsible. If he's disappointed with the verdict, well, tell us why he is. Well, you know, what exactly went wrong in that trial? But you never hear that. You never hear that. They just get away with saying it, Bruce.
Yeah, I think President Biden is the nation's leading, most powerful surrogate, you know, out there today.
Right.
And I saw that where he came up and he said he was thousand, or the Americans were disappointed in it as he was. And okay, Joe, tell us why. And
right.
No, you cannot sue the president, but at some point they can sue when he's out of office.
Well,
and
as I understand it, yeah, but let me just make a quick point on that. When he called Kyle a white supremacist, he was a private citizen and a candidate back in August of 2020. I think technically you could sue him, but I actually think it's a waste of time. I think they should go after the media people because those are the ones that I would like to see held accountable because they are so irresponsible in some of the stuff they said, Bruce.
And the thing about the media irresponsibility and potential civil suits is that I'm not a lawyer, but I'm thinking how much of the testimony from the criminal trial can they actually try and use?
Mm-hmm.
And then get witnesses to say what they saw. You know, it's already been litigated.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see what Beto O'Rourke has to say about this when he campaigns for governor.
Yeah. Well, Beto O'Rourke has he's already taking a very tough position on the border, which is kind of interesting. I think he came out basically saying that Biden is failing in the border. And I can understand why he's saying that because there's a lot of angry Democrats down on the border. But to me, the reason that I want some of these media people to be held accountable is because, you know, the standard had always been that I guess you had to know you were lying about what you were saying, or you had to be acting with the intent or whatever the right word is. But it seems to me that some of these people, they have to know that they're lying. And if they don't know they're lying, then they're so ignorant they shouldn't be on TV. And I like to see a test case, Bruce. Let me just finish this thought here. I like to see a test case, like this young the kid from Covington High School, you know, the one with the red hat. He's winning cases, as I understand. But I like to see a test case where it goes to a jury and a jury comes back with a big time punishment for some of these people. I mean, big time money punishment for some of these people. Not because I want this kid Kyle to get rich, but because these people need to be punished. They're so irresponsible, Bruce.
You talk about Sandman.
Yes, yes.
Sandman kid and his the incident with Nate Parker.
Right.
The Native American. I actually knew Nate in Lincoln, Nebraska when I was a student there.
Mm.
He kept going around the Omaha tribe and the American Indian movement, and I knew all those guys. And Nate kind of came and went. And the Omaha tribe has said he is not a spiritual leader of the tribe. They disavow that. And he benefited somewhat, I guess. I don't know. But just an unfortunate individual.
Yeah.
And,
well, it was
and,
just,
Well, they went after the media for all the things they said about them. And they got, I think, up to now $250 million.
Right. They settled out of court with the Washington Post for a lot of money.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think they settled or they're about to settle with CNN for a lot of money. But, you know, one last thought here, Bruce, but if you're if you're a shareholder at CNN or the Washington Post, you got to be sending a memo up the chain saying, I'm sick and tired of having to pay all these legal costs because you have a bunch of people on the air who keep making these mistakes. You got to clean up your act. That's what I would be saying, Bruce, because because this is going to cost, you know, Jeff Bezos has a lot of money, but I don't think he enjoys paying out $250 million in an out-of-court settlement, Bruce.
Let it fall where it falls.
No, I agree.
You know, there was no,
I agree.
There was no restraints put on the media while Rittenhouse was in during the, you know, that those weeks of the protest, the violence, and then leading up to this verdict. There was no restraint, you know. I watched Newsmax. Friends of mine said we should watch Newsmax.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I'd bring in Newsmax, bring it up. I got Mike Lindell commercials, you know, about my pillow or my slippers and stuff.
Yeah.
And I could have told you before, I just had they just recabled my neighborhood. The old cables were worn out, so I've got everything back again. So, you know, I may have missed some of that, but the verdict is the important thing. And there'll be others. There'll be others because the Marxists will continue to push, you know, for some reason thinking the ideology is the authority. Goes back to
right.
Hillary Clinton 2006 or something, detrimental reliance. You know,
mm-hmm.
if you say it enough times, people will believe it.
Right.
Well, I think that's wearing thin. You know, the American people are smarter than that.
Well, and I think you said something very important. I think this jury did the country a great service here because they were under threat. They had to know that there were people out there making threats. And yet they did the right thing. So I think in so many ways, this jury, you know, saved not just Rittenhouse, but lots of others who may come under similar attacks. But I think your overall point that people are fed up with all of this, I think we may very well see that in 2022. I think that could be the moment of the backlash when it really blows away these people on the left. Well, Bruce, we're going to have to wrap it up. Any other thoughts you wanted to put in before we wrap it up?
Did Noah and Lincoln finally take a nap?
They're yeah, one of them did. The other one didn't. So they're still one of them took a while to get down, but he's down now and that's Lincoln, and then Noah is He's hungry a lot. I guess when you're 3 months old, 4 months old, you're hungry a lot, which is probably a good thing.
Well, they're cute kids. You and your family have a nice Thanksgiving. I want to say
thank
that.
Thank you. You too, Bruce. You have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and we'll stay in touch as we do every day. But thank you so much for coming here and sharing your thoughts. I thought immediately about you when the verdict came, and I'm very happy that you joined us today. I really appreciate it, Bruce.
No, I appreciate the call. Thanks, Sylvia.
All right, my pleasure. Our good friend Bruce, become a great friend of our show, and a great friend. One of these days we'll have to meet and actually just have a cup of coffee. You know, you make these friendships, virtual friendships, as they call them. You get to know people real well. And you feel like you've known them a long time, and you look forward to the time when you actually get together with them and shake their hand and you know, have a conversation, I guess, the old-fashioned way. Well, thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Again, thanks to Bruce, and thanks to you for listening. Bye-bye, everybody.